In this coming-of-age story, Seraphir faces adversity from her family and her village, but through perseverance and a heavy dose of murder, possession, violence, and shenanigans, she's able to girl-boss her way into destroying a really good town. To finish off the month of October, we discuss the Fear Street trilogy. There are mentions of lynching and overall violence, so proceed with caution.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today on our 50th episode, I just want to mark the milestone, we are talking about the Fear Street trilogy. So three movies in one, directed by Lee Janiak, based on a series of R.L. Stein books from the 90s. Have you read these books, Val?
I don't think so.
I have not.
I've read a lot of Goosebumps.
Yes.
I might have read some Fear Street books. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things where I think I maybe, like, my parents maybe bought me, like, a Fear Street. Because during, like, Goosebumps fever, which sounds like actually a real fever. It sounds like a real disease. During like, the height of, like, the Goosebumps craze, you just could not get enough Goosebumps, right? Like, my brother and I probably had dozens of those books, and we would trade them with the neighbor kids, and it was, like, a whole thing of, like, going to the library and getting more Goosebumps, and they sold them at the grocery store, and my mom had to, like, tear us away from the little aisle with all the Goosebumps in the grocery store every time we went there, and I'm sure it was very frustrating for her, but man, everyone loved Goosebumps for that period in the 90s.
But anyway, pretty good books.
Yeah, like, okay, so there were a lot of, you know, theories. Like, I remember hearing R.L. Stein is not a real person. It's like a computer-generated thing that just shoots out ideas, and they've got a team of writers who, like, write them all up. There are all, you know, like, all those, like, schoolyard rumors about R.L. Stein. But it turns out he is just, in fact, one man. I think he wrote most of them. I don't know if he had, like, some ghostwriters. I don't know if that's ever been said, but I think he just wrote them all. I mean, they're not really that hard of books to write. Like, they're really good, of course, and they're really fun in the twists, but they're, you know, they're meant for, like, second graders. And I could see how if you've got, like, a workflow in mind, you can just pump these things out at a certain point.
And they're kind of like procedural books.
Yes.
It's not necessarily rocket science, but they're all really interesting.
Right.
I loved, like, them as a kid.
Every one of them, I think, just basically it takes, like, a mundane thing, like going to summer camp or a creepy doll, or, you know, and then there's, like, the fish out of water sequence, and then there's, like, oh, it's scary, and then, like, no, it's actually fine, and then actually, no, there's a twist, and it's even worse than you thought, and they kind of all follow this kind of same arc, I think. Some have, like, happy endings, right, and some have, like, really awful endings.
Yeah.
And some have kind of funny endings, but, like, because I remember that there was the one where they were, like, experimenting on the kids, and it turns out all the kids are just dogs that got turned into kids.
I don't remember that. I'll be honest, don't remember that one, but they're all real weird sometimes.
Yes. Well, I'm trying. Okay, what were the ones you remember?
I think I read the one with a doll.
Okay, I think it was, what was it called? What's the name of the doll? Night of the Living Dummy.
Yes. I think there was, like, two or three of those that I read.
Yeah, there was a sequel. I definitely read The Horror at Camp Jelly Jam, which is the one where it's revealed that if you win a gold medal at this summer camp, you have to, like, go take care of this creature called Jelly Jam, and then it eats everyone. I don't know.
It sounds weirdly familiar. Camp Nightmare is what I read.
Yeah.
I read Say Cheese, Welcome to the Dead House.
Yep.
I think I read The Girl Who Cried Monster, The Werewolf of Fever Swamp, One Day at Horrorland, Go Eat Worms, How I Got My Shrunken Head.
I remember that one, yes. And I also did a few of the Choose Your Own Adventures. I remember Escape from the Carnival of Horrors, because just, like, every ending was just you dying in a different horrible way, or, like, getting turned into a doll or whatever.
I think I might have read that one as well.
There was also the Goosebumps TV series, which had probably the most epic theme song ever.
Yeah, that was a good theme song.
Right, 90s shows just knew how to do a theme song. If you haven't, we'll put a link to it in the show notes, and you can go check out this theme song, because it rules. I feel like, okay, we're just talking about R.L. Stine, because I just want to talk about R.L. Stine, and this is like, I don't think he has a lot of queer characters from a 90s kids book, so I think this is our one chance to really talk about him and his works, so.
Fair, yeah.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on R.L. Stine before we get started talking about Fear Street proper?
Not particularly.
Okay.
I feel like that's a good introduction and a nice memory down nostalgia lane.
Yeah, Goosebumps rules. I'm glad we had that collective experience as 90s kids or late 80s kids, as the case may be. So anyways, Fear Street is based off... So Fear Street, the movies are based off Fear Street, the books that he wrote, which were kind of meant for like an older teen audience. And so I don't think I really read any of them, maybe one or two, but I don't think it matters because it's a totally different story. So I am thinking how to summarize this. So Fear Street is divided into three movies. Part one, which is set in 1994. Part two, which is set in 1978. And part three, which is set in 1666.
And it you tells... You get it, because that's the devil's number.
Right? And it's kind of like a tale of two cities. We've got Sunnyvale, which is like the nice, rich part of town.
It's Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, it's Romeo and Juliet, but with witches and ghouls and stabby monsters. Stabs. And lots of murder. Much murder.
These movies are graphic.
But in almost like a cartoony sort of way, like in a campy sort of way.
Yes, but for people who can't take blood... These movies are graphic.
Okay. I didn't know that about you.
No, I loved it. Okay. But I know that, like, it's squeamish. It's a yucky, yucky movie. Yeah. Like, R.L. in the Stine, first movie, when in the end, like, ugh, that's cool.
That's true. They follow, our kind of two main characters are Dina and Sam. Dina lives in Shadyside. Sam used to live in Shadyside, but now lives in Sunnyvale. And they are closeted. They kind of broke up at a certain point. But over the course of the movies, they get back together. But there's a whole lot of other stuff that happens. I don't know how much of this I can summarize. Because I feel like if I just do a summary, I'm going to be talking this whole time. So maybe we should just start talking about it. I don't
sure.
know.
Sure. We can do a quick summary. It's like a town is cursed. They think it's the witch.
Yeah.
And her girlfriend gets possessed by the witch.
Yep.
And everyone tries to kill her girlfriend. All the killers from the past.
Yes.
And then they figure things out.
The second movie is set during a summer camp in 1978. And it's really like a very classic, like, I don't know, someone at the summer camp is murdering people story. And again, while these separate stories are playing out,
and we learn
more and more about what's going on in the background.
And arguably better than they, them.
They slash them. Yes. And then the third movie, we get this kind of like, what's the name of that play that's about the witches at Salem?
Witches by Salem.
Miller. It's The Crucible.
I've never read a play in my life. I have no idea what that one is.
How do you not know The Crucible, Val?
I'm not a theater child.
Okay, but you have like an English degree.
I can't read.
Okay.
And you can't make me.
Okay, The Crucible by I think it's Herman Miller, which is a very classic. It was an allegory from McCarthyism written in the 1950s, but it's about the Salem witch trials. And the third movie is basically very much following that kind of vibe. And you learned about the witch and about how the curse came to be, and it really wasn't her at all. It was the
good family.
The good family.
The irony.
And then the fun thing that I love about the third movie is that it like surprises you halfway through. And it's like, actually, this is 1994 again, part two. And I love that like transition mm-hmm. where it like shows the logo for it, just like, and you're just like, yeah,
it was just, yeah, it's very satisfying.
It's so satisfying, it's so cool, and the transition they do between the two, it just works so well. And then the ending really sticks the landing. So I really think this is so cool that, like, I had no idea this was coming out. I had never heard of it. This was not something I was anticipating.
I think Netflix just kind of like dropped them.
Right. It's very classic Netflix. And did nothing about,
like, there was no, at least I personally didn't see any promotional period. They're just like, hey, people from Stranger Things are going to be in this movie and it's coming out right now.
Right. It's just, why do they never promote stuff? Like, I feel like even like Arcane, they did a little bit of promotion, but even that, like,
I haven't seen any Arcane promotion, only maybe like a week or two prior to it releasing, yeah. Only on Netflix.
Yeah, well, I think what I mean by promotion, I mean, I think they showed a few journalists ahead of time, and some journalists wrote some articles being like, hey, this is really cool. But like,
yeah, but despite League of Legends being a pretty big,
yeah,
like, fandom, it's insular, you know? So like, it didn't really, like, yeah, Netflix doesn't do the thing.
It's really weird how Netflix seems to not promote things. Like, I don't know, like, in New York City, you know, you didn't see any banners being like, Arcane, it's probably the best animated series in years. You know, like, no one's advertising this or making a big deal out of this the way you, I feel like HBO really makes it a big event when they have the new Game of Thrones, I forget what it's called, the House of the Dragons or whatever. You know, like, I feel like they're good at making these events, and Netflix just doesn't do that. But anyways, so I had no idea what this was. I just saw it. Someone was just like, hey, if you like Goosebumps growing up, check out this movie on Netflix. I didn't even know there were any queer characters in it. You know, it was set in 1994. I assume not. And then I started watching it, and I was like, oh, this actually rules. And Sam and Dina are a great couple. Well, aside from the part where Sam is, like, possessed by a witch for most of the movies, but
I think they could have done more with Sam.
Yeah.
She felt kind of like, you know the lamp test?
No, I do not.
Where if you replace a character with a lamp, well, if you replace a woman with a lamp and this plot doesn't change, then she's not necessarily a well-written character.
Okay, so it's like
I feel like if we had a lamp,
but with a lamp.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like if we had a lamp instead of Sam, it still pretty much would have been the same, except for when she's a little psycho.
If the lamp can be possessed by the witch, which could be a power that the witch could has. Be.
And every time I hear the lamp test, I am picturing the leg from A Christmas Story. So that lamp could have kicked.
I'm imagining the Pixar lamp, but okay.
But yeah, this is the first thing that I noticed about this movie, which everyone is going to notice, is it is really, like, beautiful. The color saturation is really cool.
Yes.
There's a lot of neon. It's just very interesting. The graphics of the title cards, of the credits, all of that stuff. It's really interesting and cool and pretty. And it does give the vibe of Goosebumps somehow. Like, just not Goosebumps, but like the books that Stein writes.
Yeah, it gives that R.L. Stein vibe to it. Even though, and I checked this because I almost wanted to know, like, did he write this? No, he was not the writer of these.
It's his publishing, right? It's like, wasn't it his imprint or something?
Well, Fear Street, I mean, he wrote the original books, but he did not write. Like, I wanted to know if he was involved at all. Like, did they bring him in to help on the scripts or anything? But no.
Gotcha. So he did write all of them?
No. He was not the screenwriter. He wrote the books.
No, the books. Yes. Yes. Oh, okay. I thought he did, like, a... Regardless.
I was talking about the childhood rumors. Maybe that's what confused you.
I thought that was just for Goosebumps. I'm distracted easily.
What is distracting you right now, Val?
Someone's walking in and out of the house. Anyway, okay. Like, three times. I don't know what's happening there.
That's bad luck.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful movie. For a movie that's very dark...
Yeah.
They made sure that we can see what's happening, which I appreciate so much. I hate the trend of movies being dark over the past, like, two decades, where it's like, you don't know what's happening. I can't see the characters on the screen. It is pitch black. Why are you doing this? And people keep repeating it. Harry Potter, those movies are super dark when it's dark. You can't see any character on screen. Game of Thrones, a lot of times you were just, like, staring at nothing because it's dark. But yeah, this movie in the darkness wasn't that dark, and I could see the characters, and I could see what they're doing, and I appreciate that. So a lot of little things came together really well in this movie.
Yes.
So technically, like, the technical aspect of it, I enjoyed a lot.
Yes.
And also, the movies are great.
I'm going to ask a mean question and ask you, which of the three is your favorite?
I was literally going to ask you that question right now.
Ha, I got it. You first. So now you have to answer it first.
Which one? The second one.
And why?
First of all, by that point, we're already into the story, right? I was super invested by the second movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just something about its structure is so classic that it was enjoyable to watch it. Once again, I'm going to keep repeating this every single time we do anything remotely scary. I get scared very, very easily. I hate scary movies. People keep making me watch them because it's funny, because I hate them. But I don't like scary movies. And the way that I watched this is actually when it came out. I didn't watch as they were releasing, but I did wait until all three are out. And then I watched all of them at night alone. Because I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to watch a scary movie, I might as well do it correctly. Because it's a very, very rare occurrence.
Right, because they were released one week after the other, right?
Yeah, they followed the arcane model.
Right.
And I really, for some reason, like the second one more than the others, because the third one didn't work as well for me. I don't know, maybe it was something about the silly costumes and accents and the small set. It was a little more of like, this is a small production kind of thing, whereas the other movies felt bigger.
I mean, the third movie, they are doing this kind of very, very particular period piece, but it's the same actors from the other movies. So, like, it's set in 1666, but it's got, you know, the same person who played Dina is now playing the quote-unquote witch, Sarah Fear. And so it is asking a lot to, like, take all these characters that you've just gotten used to and, like, have watched two movies starring and been like, okay, now watch them playing characters in 1666. It's a big change in the third movie, and I agree with you that that's probably the weakest part of it.
And another thing that didn't sit well with me, it was just the one scene. There was one scene that I was like, ooh, I don't know if they should have done that scene like that. But
what scene
you know
that?
How throughout the movies, whenever Dina or Sam or whatever, I think Dina most of all, like when she sees the witch, it kind of flashes to Sarah Fear's face, right?
Yeah.
So we know what the witch looks like. And there is an actor for the witch. And in the third movie, technically it is that person, just Dina is experiencing it, so therefore her actor plays the witch, even though there's already an actor for the witch. At one point, they try to lynch her.
Oh, and yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm like making a bigger deal out of it than it is, but like they do flash to the real Sarah Fear whenever they show her experiencing this sort of trauma.
Yeah.
But for that one time, they didn't. And I don't know, it just like was a little weird and strange and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's a short enough scene that I don't think it's a huge deal. And like, it wouldn't make sense for the actor to just be in there for that one moment. I understand it. But they also didn't have to have her lynched.
Yeah, there's other ways they could have portrayed that.
Yeah, but because it's a gory movie. There's a lot of different deaths. Like, they don't have to be that, you know. There's a lot of different ways they could have made that scene different. I don't know, they think she's a witch. Witches get burnt at the stake. Like, you could have just done that. There's a tree. You know, trees burn. There is a way to do it that didn't necessarily have the same weight that scene does.
Yeah.
But once again, I'm not an expert. I'm white, right? It's none of my business, kind of. I don't know how to explain that in a better way, but like that scene was a little like, it made me pause.
Yeah. Well, especially because, okay, I'm trying to, The Crucible, which again, is just like clearly the biggest inspiration for the 1666 arc. The witches, I believe, are killed by, they do the thing where they put the heavy stones on them.
Ooh, ouch.
Yes.
That's awful.
and or burning, because you... Oh, it's by Arthur Miller, not Herman Miller. Herman Miller makes chairs. I know what I'm talking about.
I don't. We balance each other out perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, I guess, okay, some of the characters are hanged. Okay. I'm going to disagree with you and say my favorite is actually the first one. I've got a couple different reasons for this. I mean, the first one, I like the time period of 1994, which, just to make everyone feel really old, was 28 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone,
you're older than me.
Yes, everyone who's a millennial is having a heart attack right now, so I apologize for mentioning that that's the fact, but it was a long time ago. But like, as someone who was alive during this time, unlike Val, they got the aesthetic right. Like the beginning sequence in the mall when they're in that bookstore, I forget if it's actually a, whatever it's called, a Walton Books, which is what the big book chains in the malls in the 90s were. But they got the aesthetic of it perfectly down. And then they go into the novelty store that sells all the like black lights and that weird orb thing with the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff and all the weird gimmicks. I forget the name of that store. It was some kind of like... gosh, now I'm forgetting all the names of all the stores, but like they captured the 90s mall feeling perfectly. Like, and it was so weird how like social life in the 90s just revolved around the mall. Like when I was in middle school, which was not in the 90s, Val, don't make any jokes, it was in the early 2000s. But even when I was in middle school, like after school, we just go and hang out at the mall. That's what people did. You just went and hung out at the mall. Like, what else would you do? We were in this suburb that kind of had nothing else. So everyone hung out at the mall. And I think they capture that really well, the feeling of being in the mall and just that like 90s mall. But anyways, I've just talked about the mall. The other things I like about the movie...
It was a cool looking mall. Like,
it's a cool looking mall.
A lot
mall.
Of it is based around that mall.
Yeah.
Almost all of it is based around that mall.
Right.
The camp was where the mall is.
Yeah. The camp was where the mall is. And it turns out the witch was buried near there.
It's amazing how much that tree survived.
Yes. That is quite the survivor of a tree. And then I just like I feel like the plot is really well done and just like the whole, like, I feel like that it plays up that kind of Romeo and Juliet type thing. And then the whole, like, I don't know, kids on bikes and the police aren't taking them seriously. It just works really well. I really like the first act.
It has some of my favorite characters out of the entire show. So, movie. Kate and Simon.
And Simon, yeah, the drug dealers.
They are the best characters. I love them. They were my favorite.
Yeah.
Who were your favorite characters?
I
liked Ziggy.
Yeah, Ziggy's great.
And those two. And I think what they have in common is the Home Alone, let's set booby traps really well thing that they have going. It's fun watching them hatch a plan and then do the plan. And Yeah.
I really like, who's the custodian? That Josh? No.
Martin.
Martin.
Martin was great too.
Yep. Loved him. Very, very fun character. Very strong opinions. He's one of the people who's like the first person who realizes something's like wrong with the actual person who's the villain in the end. And I don't know. I just like that. Like the character who like knows that something's off but is unable to say anything.
And he also survived the massacre in the beginning of the first one.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. I liked him too.
He gets arrested for tagging his own workplace, which makes no sense. But the police have to scapegoat him and keep him away. And then it turns out it was the sheriff, Nick Good, all along.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I really like Dina. I don't know. I think she's an interesting character.
She's awesome.
Yes.
And she distracted me in the first movie. Maybe that's why it's not my favorite. I just had no idea what was happening.
The actor
she's mesmerizing.
The actor who plays her is wonderful. She's been in other things. Like, what else was she in?
She was in that I think it is also a Netflix show or movie, but one where she's like a kleptomaniac or something. I haven't seen it.
Right. Trinkets.
Yeah.
She played Mo in Trinkets.
I haven't seen it. I just saw like the trailer and a half or something, but yeah. And she's a very good actor.
Yes. And she's stunningly gorgeous.
Yeah, which was distracting watching the movie. Yeah.
Yes.
So honestly, like, come on.
I don't know how to say her. Is it Kiana Madeira? I apologize. Once again, we are
cursed. I'll splice that together so you sound perfectly coherent, which is usually what I do when we try to figure names out.
As always, I am cursed by being unable to pronounce someone's name. She's wonderful. I think all the actors do a pretty good job.
They're all really good.
Yeah.
And like, it's surprising, not surprising, but kind of surprising because there aren't that many big names in there. There are three actors that I recognize. There are Sadie Sink, Maya Hawke, both of whom are from Stranger Things.
Yep.
So, Heather, who gets killed in the first one in the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say, Maya Hawke dies pretty quickly.
And Sadie Sink plays Ziggy, who is the main character of the second movie.
Yep.
Who is also Ziggy is also Gillian Jacobs when she's an adult. And she's from Community, right?
Yes.
So, you know her from Community. I know her from that one video where she got excited about the guy who does crossword puzzles. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay, I'm going to send it to you. Another
video for us to put a link to in the description.
But yeah, like, there are only three names here that I recognized in any capacity. But everyone else was really good.
Yeah.
Even speaking of Maya Hawke's character in the beginning getting killed, it's like a 5-minute introduction, right? It's not long. Two characters are introduced, right? Heather and Ryan, her interest? I don't know. I don't think he's her boyfriend, but they're definitely into each other.
Yeah.
And they're kind of flirting. He's like, I'm gonna drive her home from work. And then it turns out that he's the one who killed her. But like, something is very obviously wrong with him. Like, we saw the change on screen, right?
Yep.
And despite it being such a short introduction to a movie, it is a quick scene. But I was already so invested in both of them.
Yeah.
How did they do that? I was like, no, Ryan, don't do it. Something is wrong with you. And then, like, I don't know, just the camera work. Yeah. That's so cool. And they keep doing that same type of camera work for a lot of the kills, especially with the knife.
Yeah.
I think Ziggy gets killed the same way that Heather gets killed. So in the end of the second movie, it's pretty much identical.
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's just something about that's very satisfying.
Yeah. It's clearly just a well-crafted movie. Like, everything lands perfectly. Like, there's just an artfulness to it. Like, it would have been very, I don't know, like, I feel like it's very easy to make, like, a teen horror film that, like, kind of is fine. But, like, this goes beyond that in my mind.
And you know what I think does it a lot as well? All the actual killers that we have, we are sympathetic towards in some capacity.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't have that in They/Them. We don't necessarily have it.
Not even a little bit.
We don't necessarily have it in movies like Freddy Krueger, in, that's not the movie, but you know what I'm talking about. In the one with the hockey mask dude, Jason?
Hold on, Freddy Krueger's Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Hockey mask Jason. Oh god, I'm bad at this. He's from, I can't remember. I'm so,
regardless, we know who we're talking
I don't
about.
Watch a lot of horror, to be honest, either.
But like, you know, in those movies there is some sort of backstory to like the killers, and it's a little sad, and it's like, oh no, this dude got killed painfully and now he is gonna kill everyone else in the world. Like, there is some sympathy for them, but it's not necessarily something that makes me go like, oh no, poor guy.
Yeah.
In this one, they managed to do that with nearly every single killer.
Yeah.
All of the killers that we have been humanized for us. And in the end, they gave us a good reason for why they did it too. So it doesn't feel gross. We find out that all of those kids and people who got possessed by the spirit of the murderer, whatever, like by the curse, right? All of them were just regular people.
Right.
And they fell victim to it.
They were mostly innocent, I think. There Maybe was not like, innocent, but...
Who specifically do you mean? Like the preacher?
I don't, yeah. Okay.
That's one of them. Yeah, like... Yes. But for example, there's a kid, right?
Yeah.
I doubt that it's like a creepy, crazy child. I think it was just a child that got possessed.
Right.
There's a janitor. Was he a janitor? The guy with the like the severe burns.
I think so. I don't remember.
Regardless, I think the only one that had like an actual, oh, this is not a great person out of all those killers was the preacher. And he doesn't show up.
Yeah.
We never see him in the other movies or like in the future, quote unquote.
As one of the killers, yeah.
Yeah, it's always people who are victims. So we have that, we have Ruby Lane, who was just like a quiet girl.
Yeah.
Who was depressed, who was suicidal, who was having a pretty difficult time in high school, right? And then she got possessed, she killed a bunch, she got killed, or something happened to her. I don't remember if she got killed or killed herself. But like, it wasn't her, right?
Right.
And that makes it sadder. Then we have Tommy, who's just like this regular guy who's in a summer camp with his girlfriend. They're about, it's just like a good summer, right?
Yep.
And then he gets possessed, kills everyone, dies. Ryan, we saw the change on screen. It was instantaneous and it was sad. And like all of those killers and them being humanized for us and having very sympathetic stories, it was interesting and refreshing. It actually weirdly reminded me of I'm Legend, even though that is like a completely different movie.
Yeah, you have to say more about that.
Have you seen it?
I'm Legend, yes. And I've read the book.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a zombie movie with Will Smith and like there's a zombie apocalypse. The zombies are not necessarily zombies. They're just really, really cool. In the book, they're vampires. And then like in the movie, they're just a very light sensitive kind of like new type of human.
Yeah.
And he spends the entire movie like trying to figure out a cure. But then in the end, it turns out that like him being one of the very last people on Earth, they have their own society. It's their world now. And he's the boogeyman.
Yeah.
And I think it ends the same in the book too, right?
Yeah.
But like by the end of that movie, even though we've been through all of the heartbreak and like the sadness with Will Smith, we watched him kill his dog. By the end of that, I think I was more on the side of the infected than I was on his side. And so was he in a weird way. This movie kind of has the same vibe of like, yeah, there are all these killers and we really, really don't want them to be there. But we don't want them to be there not because they're like, not only because they're scary and terrifying, gonna kill the main characters and do like all this bad stuff, but because we know that they are people who are also victims to this curse, who don't deserve to be remembered as they are, as these like awful, you know, like serial killers, just like family annihilators, all of that stuff, right?
Right.
And like, that is satisfying when the curse breaks and the good family is torn apart for everything they've done. And like, you know, in a this is written for younger audience sort of way, things are resolved in a just way. I like that as well.
Yeah.
Because somehow, if I'm remembering correctly, like somehow all of the killers of the past, their names were like cleared, right? That's what happens. And like, I don't know, there's just something about that that makes it more interesting to me. Because there is a boogeyman and it's not necessarily like all of these people involved in it.
Yeah.
After that, a long-winded explanation. What do you think about that?
I think it was a very interesting comparison to I Am Legend.
Thank you.
I'm trying to like parse so left everything field. You just said. But no, I saw what you meant once you kind of like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, got there. But like, I totally agree. And I think what's interesting to me to build on that, it's nice to see a work of horror media where like it does have a happy ending. Whereas I feel like They Slash Them, which we keep talking about because we just watched. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that ending was very happy. Everyone's traumatized. It sure ended. It sure ended. I don't know. Some of the other horror stuff, you know, they sometimes have like, and I guess this one does have like that mid-credit scene where you see the book of spells or whatever gets stolen. Someone takes it and it's like, uh-oh, someone's out there. They could do.
Yeah, but that's the R.L. Stein version of it. It's like the classic horror, it's not over, but like
yes,
in a way that only he kind of does.
But I do like the message of this also that, like, I don't know, it's an interesting message that the sheriff is the bad guy. Very timely, I think, for a thing that came out in 2021 to portray the police as the bad guy. I don't know, something else I was thinking as I was rewatching them. Okay, I'm going to get on my soapbox now for a little bit.
I got off mine. All yours.
Okay. So one thing I think that has been really nice about, like, streaming and, like, the development of streaming platforms and the kind of media they're producing has been the rise of, like, what I think of as, like, the horror adjacent type of film. Like, I don't...
Adjacent? Sorry. God. I tried to hold it. Did you see the pause?
I did. Okay, the works that are, like, because I don't think these movies are necessarily that scary. They you know, like, they are horror films. They're slasher films. There's murders. There's blood. There's violence. But it's not, like...
It's not scary.
It's not something that's going to give you nightmares.
Yeah.
Unless, like, any kind of violence gives you nightmares. They are thrillers. They are horror adjacent. And I feel like that didn't used to happen quite as... Like, you would have horror films like Night of the Living Dead or Nightmare on Elm Street or Scream. And, I mean, there were parodies of them, like Scary Movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't really think you had this kind of niche of things that were kind of like, they're horror adjacent. Like, they take the ideas of horror movies, but use it for something other than just trying to scare you.
Yes.
And that's what I think what these three movies do. And I really like that, because as someone who doesn't like straight horror that much, or, like, I don't know, like, the last horror movie I enjoyed was... I don't really know, because I don't really enjoy them. Like, I really like Night of the Living Dead.
I liked
Babadook, maybe.
I like Dawn of the Dead. That one was scary.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm just not a big fan of horror. Like, it's just not my thing. But I like these, like, the Stranger Things and the Fear Streets and... Try and think of another example, but those are the two that come immediately to mind of these horror adjacent, you know, movies and shows. And that's what I like. And I really like it. And I hope they do more of these, because when you're a scaredy cat like me who gets nightmares, this is perfect. Because I like the tropes of horror. I just don't like not being able to sleep at night.
Yeah. Actually, like, when I was younger, maybe like 12 or something. When did Constantine come out?
I've never seen Constantine.
Let's see. 2005. So I was 10. So, like, I walked out of Constantine because we went to watch it in the movie theaters, and I was horrified. And it's not a scary movie.
I don't even know. I've never seen Constantine.
It's whatever. But, like...
Oh, that's a Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. I Am Legend. Almost didn't finish that because it was scary.
Okay.
28 Days Later was a struggle to get through.
Oh, like, okay. I did like that one.
It was fun, but I was scared. Once again, like, I don't know if it was maybe because I was a little too young for those movies. Because once again, like, Constantine was 10 years old. I don't think I was older than 14 when I watched the others I mentioned. Like, yeah. I think maybe I would probably be okay with those movies now and not get scared at all. But, like, just... from past experiences, they were very scary and I couldn't sleep. So I'm not a huge fan of it.
Yeah.
If I were to watch scary movies now, I'm sure it will be fine. Like, but...
Okay, let's put that to the test then.
Well, we actually absolutely need to have a watch party, maybe all of our friends getting together and watching Ready or Not, because that is a group movie and it is silly and fun. Similar vibes to Fear Street.
About it. Ready or Not?
Yeah, don't look it up. I don't want you to know anything about it.
This says it's a tactical first-person shooter. I guess it's not the video game that came up.
Let's all get together to play a video game. A first-person shooter. Only one of us gets to play at a time.
Yeah.
No, it is definitely not that.
Okay.
But actually, like, a lot of they-them kind of reminded...
It's they/them.
Whatever.
Say it right.
They/them.
Happy. The whole point, like the best thing about that movie.
It's a pun.
Yes, is the joke. And you keep ruining it. And it's okay. Like, that's the one good thing about the whole movie.
Okay, fair, fair. They/them reminded me a lot of Ready or Not.
Okay.
In a way that doesn't make sense.
I don't know if that's a thing that I would want to watch with other people, though.
But it was good. And it was fun.
Okay.
And the main character, have you watched Three Billboards Outside of Something?
Nope.
Oh my god, really?
Really? Okay.
You need to watch this really good movie. This conversation no longer matters.
Yeah.
let's get back to the show. There was one thing that, like, I think they started to kind of make commentary on in the first movie, but it kind of tapered off. The good town. What was it?
Sunnyvale.
Yeah, Sunnyvale. The good town. Because it's the goods live there. You get it?
Yep.
When Sam broke up with Dina, it was because she was moving there.
Yeah.
Right? So, in a weird way, she hid her queerness to be able to go to that town peacefully and live there.
Yeah.
And, like, that's an interesting commentary because a lot of the curse is all about queerness because in the past, Sarah and her girlfriend, whose name I don't remember, who is also played by the same actor that is playing Sam.
Hannah?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So, Sarah and Hannah are together in the past as well, or at least they get together.
Yeah.
And that's what causes a lot of the anger towards them.
Yes.
And in the first movie, we kind of start with that being a problem for Dina because her girlfriend breaks up with her, moves down, and, like, hides that part of her to be able to live peacefully in this, like, beautiful version of their run-down town.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot there. And I kind of liked that they didn't, like, push it that hard, that they left it in the beginning as the beginning of the problems that Dina is experiencing it as. And then, like, in the third one, they made it a plot point and made it part of the curse and part of the bigger issue of that society, of those two towns. And I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was just something kind of cool about it. Once again, like, they were heavy-handed with the preacher and the sheriff being, like, the bad guys. Even though the preacher was also cursed, right?
Yeah, the preacher, you know, kills a bunch of people.
But he was already a little...
He was not a good guy, but, like, not, like, a murdered 12 children in the chapel kind of guy.
Yeah.
Which is what he ends up doing.
Yeah, violently.
Yeah.
It's, so, like, there is something there. There's also the commentary that it's almost like a parasitic relationship where one town benefits from the other town being really run dry.
Yeah. Basically, and Sunnyvale, because of the curse, is basically leeching Shadyside's prosperity.
Mm-hmm. A lot of that is very interesting commentary. They didn't, like, push it on you, which I love. Because I hate when movies do that, because then it becomes, like, kind of like you're watching a lecture or like, a grad student's final thesis kind of vibe. And I don't like that. And this movie did it in a way that was kind of organic. It was a thing in the beginning. It was a little bit of an issue throughout the whole thing where Sam is like, I don't want my mom to know.
Yeah.
And then in the end, it's like, oh, Sarah got killed for that. Like, that is what she got killed for. Not she got killed because she's a witch, but also because she is gay.
Yes.
Like, that ultimately is what got her caught. It's what got her murdered. It is something that pretty much signed her death warrant for her.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I like that.
And Simon and Kate get blamed because they're poor kids in the wrong part of town. And that
they sell drugs.
Yeah. And that custodian gets blamed because he's an African-American man working in, you know, a nicer part of town. There is a very common theme throughout here of, like, characters are punished because unfairly because of their, you know, they don't fit the mold, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They're not white, upper middle class, straight people in this society. And it's an interesting thing because it's not, they don't make a point of, like, beating you over the head with it, but it's very clearly there.
Yes. Which, once again, like, that takes a lot of balancing, and I think they did it pretty well.
Yeah.
Except for the lynching scene.
Yeah, which is the one scene that, yeah, you, as you were mentioning, you, that kind of stood out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And not in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, do you have any more thoughts about this?
I just like it. I don't know. I don't have that much to say about it, except for the fact that I really like it, and it is, I don't know, I feel like it's going to be like a Halloween tradition for me to rewatch this, because it's just, they're fun, they're short, they're snappy, like, they're not, they, you know, there's three movies, but each of them is less than 2 hours. You know, you could totally just do, like, as they did, you know, like, one movie a weekend, and mm-hmm. and leading up to Halloween, and it's just, like, they're fun, they've got two queer characters in the leading roles, and it's, I don't know, it's fun.
I don't know what else I have to say about that.
And it's got some, it's got a good message.
It has good music.
And it's got pretty, good music.
And it's
actors do a good job. What else is there to say?
The special effects were not CGI'd, which amazing. Because they looked great.
It captures that very like classic, like
summer
camp slasher, mall slasher, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like Final Fantasy and Scream had like a legitimate child sort of vibe.
Final Fantasy?
Final Destination. Did I say Final Fantasy?
You totally said Final Fantasy.
I was it's like Final Destination and Scream like, had a illegitimate child.
Final
Fantasy,
to think,
you know.
Wait, what the heck? Where was the Chocobo or the Moogle? Okay. I think that's
now good that we've to talked about it in a way, pointed out my faux pas in a way that I can't edit out.
Yep. Thank you all for tuning in to our 50th episode. We're excited for 50 more, and we'll do something big for the 100th episode. So,
and also, thanks for sticking with us for our kind of like unmentioned but there October series of episodes.
Yes, our Spooktober Fest. So, just to mention our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest are at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. You can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com, and our website is InMediaLez.com. And our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com.
There we go. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
And we'll see you in the next one.
God bless you.